or near enough. Sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Flat Nickel Podcast. I'm your host, Hannah Nawa. Today we have two interviews combined in one. We have Michael McKenzie and Rick Tiger. And these interviews were way better than I could have ever anticipated. The one with Michael McKenzie was last minute. We didn't know that we were going to be interviewing him. And then Rick Tiger, I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I want to address the fact that these interviews were recorded shortly after we found out about the passing of Mac Miller. And I wanted to mention that because I think you can tell that it finally started to sink in a little bit by the time we got around to interviewing Rick. And it's a little bit more somber. I'm a little bit more quiet in that interview. I just want to say to any of my friends and my colleagues who knew him and loved him and worked with him and were friends with him, my heart absolutely breaks for you, and I am so sorry for your loss. And it's something that I've been thinking about and seeing everybody's tributes and seeing how everybody has responded to it and seeing my friends respond to it and just know how devastated they are has been really difficult to see. And when we were talking to Rick, I feel like he said a lot of things that are really important to think about when you are dealing with loss and the fact that all of this is so arbitrary. It really, in the grand scheme of things, fame and money and status and followers, it doesn't mean a whole lot. And that at the end of the day, the thing that matters the absolute most is the content of your character and the people that you love and the people that love you. And whether or not you're kind and respectful and loving, and it really, you know, I think was a great thing to hear and discuss, having just gotten that news and knowing that everyone that I've worked with that worked with him and knew him always spoke so incredibly highly of him and how wonderful he was and how great of a guy he was. And so I hope that you guys can just kind of think of that as you listen to this episode and remember that there are so many things that are incredible about this industry and about music and the way that it brings people together, and that the most important thing is the way that we treat each other, and the message that we leave behind, the legacy that we leave behind. And hopefully for all of us, that's one of goodness and love and light. And I'm rambling. It's a little bit late. It's around midnight, and I've been watching everybody's tributes and reflecting and thinking about what Rick said and just thinking about my friends that are mourning and grieving this loss. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and that's about all I've got left to say. I think if anybody ever asks me what my pet peeve is, it's going to be 3 seconds of silence at the beginning of podcasts, because man, does it get me angry every time he does it. It's like, I don't care about room tone. I just want to talk.
Our listeners care. Well, they don't know it, but they care about room tone.
Well, the listeners, for the record, we were in the middle of sound check and things moving around outside before performance, so you're going to hear some rustling. That sound bit that I did by myself, I didn't sleep last night, mm-hmm. and so I've been talking in my old-timey accent all day.
a staple.
And I kept going up to Sarah before this interview and talking to her in the most horrific British accent. Which normally I have quite a good British accent, but I was putting it on. I was being a ham.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her I was going to do the entire interview in this accent.
I think we can start a merch line, and it'll be Hananawa being a ham.
Being a ham. Hamma Nawa?
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see if it's in the cards.
Hamma?
I know. I get what you're doing.
Okay. Like I said, I did not sleep last night, so this is going to be quite interesting. And this is an interview that we in the industry would call unprepared, because we didn't know this was happening until about 15 minutes ago. But I think I did quite well. I got everything set up. I got questions together. I was charming and polite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just being my delightful self.
You've done a fantastic job. We just need to introduce the guest. I can edit that out.
No, keep it in. Keep it in. It's fine. Would you like to introduce yourself? Do the first day of school, very uncomfortable. It does feel very like we're having a parent-teacher conference, mm-hmm. except there's two teachers and one parent instead.
Feel more like the child than the parent. Yes. It's okay. Sure, I'll introduce myself. My name is Michael McKenzie. I'm a singer-songwriter. I currently live in Shippensburg, but originally from Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, wow.
I knew that because I did my research. but what's actually really interesting, and I don't know if we're going to combine these interviews because I don't know how long these interviews are going to be, but Rick Tiger is from Louisiana. So we have two not original Pennsylvanians back to back, which is delightful. But it's also funny because my first question is about Tallahassee.
Okay.
And your upbringing.
All right.
And pretty much, I'm going into this relatively blind. I don't really know anything about you. We didn't get to meet beforehand. There was no pre-interview. But how did your upbringing in Tallahassee influence your songwriting style? And how, I guess, what kind of music was playing in your house when you were growing up? And were those artists at all influential to you?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good question. my upbringing, I went to a Pentecostal church. Okay. I spent most of my young years in church. That's where I started my singing. Singing along with church, singing, you know, doing different programs, singing along with my father who sings in church. So the music I listened to most, my family listened to country music.
Mm-hmm.
Had a big influence on my writing. My artists are, you know, Merle Haggard, George Jones, Jerry Reed. So yes, they had a big influence on how I write songs. I write from however I'm feeling. If you listen to my songs I have tonight, a lot of them are, some people say they're sad. I say they're from the heart. One of the songs I wrote was about my wife's grandparents. They were married 68 years. So, and her grandmother was not doing very well. So I wrote it in as her grandfather would look at it. You know, mm-hmm. They've been married 68 years. They've been together for pretty well forever. You know, how would I deal with that kind mm-hmm. of thing? So I also listen to rock, you know, Whitesnake, AC/DC. You know, I branched out. Played basketball in high school, so, you know, a little reggae, a little, you know, just, I was all over the board.
Wait, is the basketball and the reggae, like, connected somehow?
A little bit, yeah. Because okay. One of the guys I played with on the basketball court, he also listened to reggae, so, of course, you know, going to games, it's like, mm-hmm. Hey, listen to this. That's how I got into it and enjoyed it, so.
Sam's a big basketball fan.
Huge basketball fan.
As well, we know.
We can save that for off-mic conversation. Otherwise, we won't have any music stuff for the podcast.
Understand. Yeah, I love basketball also.
Yeah, suddenly this turns into Sam's Spork podcast, where Hannah's banging her head against the wall repeatedly.
Well, that could be a song, you know. I'm I'm sure I can figure out how to write.
I have a lot of songs written about me. I am a wealth of inspiration. Unfortunately, none of those songs are very good, content-wise, not music-wise.
I think it's kind of interesting the way that you said, I'm sure I could figure out how to write that. And you, when you talk, you mentioned a very, you know, you look at situations kind of, like you said, from the heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, what situations hit you as, I'm sure I could figure out how to write that? The example that you gave us of your wife's parents, or grandparents, sorry, your wife's grandparents, is one that I think clearly, but are there any, like, just out of the ordinary things that you look at and think, oh man, I need to figure out how to write about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have multiple songs in works of, you know, how the world is going right now, how we treat other people, or to, you know, drinking songs. I wrote one last year for a wedding. They didn't know I was going to write it. I sat down with the bride, kind of went down, you know, how they met, pretty much. And then from that information, I could take and write their song. You know, they met in a bar. She was on a bar stool. You know, she really didn't want someone at the time. He was kind of chasing her. You know, they were together 23 years before they decided to get married. That kind of, you know, that information. So I pretty well take anything and make it, put it together to write a song. It's funny, I like drinking songs, but I don't drink. It's from the aspect of, if, say, you were drinking, I can look at you and go, oh, okay. And then I'd write something down. I'm always either putting it in my phone, I have a book, you know, just writing little words down, little words that pop in my head. So that's how I could come up, you know, just the simple fact of her banging her head, I could...
That's funny because that's how I write scripts too. It's like, do you feel like you almost look at everything under a microscope?
To a point, yes.
Because I feel like that is a very common thing amongst writers, is you are analyzing the way that people interact with each other, and you're sort of, I don't know, watching people like you watch a movie, if that makes sense, because you can sort of piece together this story.
And just going through the world is a movie.
Yeah.
You know, how it all plays out.
That's funny, because that's something that that I think about a lot, but we've never really talked to, I think, a writer that is able to, that, or not is able, but does sort of analyze a lot of the things around them and write that into their songs.
I think it's unique, your standpoint, the way you phrased it, because it very blatantly seems like it's from an outside perspective, whereas most writers, when you hear them talk, they seem to, you know, talk as if it's coming from internally, you know, how they process and translate events that they've been through and see. So I thought it was kind of a unique standpoint hearing that you look at other situations.
And I read in your bio that a lot of your songs also have to deal with your life experiences pertaining to, like, falling in love and getting married and having a kid and being in the military and all of that stuff. Is there ever a certain song? You mentioned that a lot of people think that your songs are sad.
Yes.
Is there ever a certain song for you that's difficult to perform live because it stirs up memories, it stirs up emotions?
Absolutely. There's a couple of them where... of course, the one about my wife's grandparents, because I was very close to them. And then there's a song I wrote, Pain in My Heart, where it talks about the pain I was going through. And everybody goes through it. It's just how you perceive it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, why is everything against me? You know, why do I have to go through this? Not understanding you go through this to grow, to make you better when you go through it. But you don't see that when you're going through. And then some other ones, you know, where you take the perspective of, like, losing you, you know, stuff like that. You know, where there's a bridge in Pennsylvania. I don't remember the name of it right now, sorry.
Okay.
But the bridge was built to move coal from, like, New York area. Mm-hmm. Around Pittsburgh. That's why it was built. Well, a tornado came through, ripped half the building, or half the bridge down.
Was it in a valley?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there.
So the perspective I've taken from that is when I wrote the song, looking at that, because you're standing on the bridge, part of the bridge, but the other part of the bridge is laying on the ground.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I'll try and find a picture to post, because it is such an incredible thing to look at.
I mean, when you look at it, it's, you know, how did this part of the bridge stand where the other part's laying on the ground? All scattered by the wind. And that line is actually in one of my songs.
And that's something that you're writing about that isn't even... You're not just watching people. That's a thing. That's a historical event. That is a non-living object, and you're able to still pull from that.
And it's also the way I write songs is in the perspective of, if I'm singing something to you or to you, you're going to hear it and go, okay, I understand the words, but how does that affect me from what I went through? That's what I want people to understand of how I write songs. Not just my songs are sad. Yes, they're sad. Life's sad. We move on. It's from the heart. If you sit and listen to the words, listen to the song, it'll speak to your heart where you go, okay, I understand now. And that's some of the songs that go, I have to step back from the feeling of the song. I put the feeling that I wrote when I was in the song. But sometimes I can't always sing it with that feeling, because then I mess up the song.
I had a sort of a continuation from that question, which is, are there certain songs of yours that you've noticed have stirred up emotions in your audience? Has there been a certain situation where an audience member has come up to you after the show and be like, this song really meant a lot to me because it reminded me of this, it made me feel this way?
Yes. I've had a few occasions with that, where I'll use my wife, for instance. At first, she could not hear me sing that song. Like, she would have to zone out, because it so touching for her, because of who it was about. And I've had some other ones, they didn't say the particular song, but, you know, they felt it was about them. You know, they really felt what I was trying to come across with my songs.
With the songs that are about your personal life, for example, this song about your wife's grandparents, does that ever feel nerve-wracking being on stage? And I know being on stage there's sort of, we always say that as soon as you perform a song for the first time, it's no longer yours. It belongs to your audience. It becomes about them, like you said. It transforms. But does it ever become nerve-wracking for those songs that maybe are a little bit more personal to put that out there at all?
Not really.
It's just all the same emotion.
Yeah,
as far
I mean, there's always emotions to different songs. But, you know, going back to what I said earlier, you know, what you take from it and what he takes from it is totally different, or what I took from it when I wrote it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the tool I use to make people think of, yes, you're going through things, or you're not going through things, you know, happy songs, but, you know, it's just what's in my heart to let out for everyone else to hear. Because they're truly... Any song you write is not yours. You're just the person that it came through to actually write.
How do you balance playing music with other obligations? You have a family, you have a career. How do you manage to balance the two? I think that's something that we talk about. We talk about work-life balance, but it's work-music balance for most people.
It is a balance. There's nights where I want to play and I'm up till 11 o'clock at night when I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to work. So, you know, I have to... I made it a point to me and my wife. You know, I take care of her and then I do my music. You know, I make sure she has her time with me. And plus, I have time you know, to express my feelings with my music.
How long have you been playing gigs?
A little over a year now.
Okay.
So I'm still new at it.
Uh-huh.
I'm still learning.
How has the music circuit for you, where you're playing, how has that changed since you first started? Where, I don't think that our, because it is local, our listeners will understand, but where was your first gig that you played out at?
The first gig I played is a wedding.
Was it the same one you wrote a song for?
It is the same one, yes.
And that was a surprise?
That was a surprise for them, yes.
Did they know?
She knew that it was, did not.
Oh, okay.
Because I took their information, 30 minutes later I came back with a song. Sometimes they come back that time period, some I've been working on for a couple years now, so.
Did you, when you were performing at that wedding, did you introduce that song as, this is a song that I wrote about the
yes.
wedding room?
Okay. I made a big deal about it. It wasn't more for me, it was for them,
mm-hmm.
because it was their song,
right.
their wedding, their day. I made a plaque, had their names at the top. I had the word, I printed out the words of the song, and then at the bottom I put like the date.
That's really sweet.
And, you know, presented them. They had no clue I was going to
yeah.
do that, so, you know, it was very nice for them.
And then from there, you know, I've the Foundry, you've played the Foundry in
yes,
Chambersburg.
Yes, that was this year. I played the Foundry more.
What kind of venues have you been playing?
I started out with like the open mic nights. I wanted Carlisle, and then there's another one my buddy puts on in Harrisburg. So I've been doing them. That's how I kind of started, you know, just to get out there, and because it was very nerve-wracking to start singing in front of people when you don't think you can sing at all. So that was very hard. And then I moved on to the Foundry. I've played, Shippensburg has the farmer's market on Mondays.
Yes, mm-hmm. yep.
I played there last year a couple mm-hmm. times. So just to, you know, get out there and get people to hear me. And that's been the biggest obstacle, was trying to get people to hear me. Because for them, venues, you're more of background noise.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I got to play the Corn Festival here in Shippensburg. So, but that's still the same concept.
It's that sort of background.
Yeah, you're just background noise.
We talk about that a lot, particularly with the bar scene. The bar and brewery scene.
Yeah.
A lot of the bands that we talk to, particularly the more folk, country, Americana, acoustic artists, get stuck in that background noise sort of rut of those are the venues that you're playing. You know what? I just popped in my head as I was thinking about that. Can you imagine having like a hard rock band try and be background noise someplace?
I know of some places that have tried. Yeah, but it's more of an annoyance as background noise.
Right, and it's...
There is a reason why the softer genres get chosen for those kinds
yeah.
of things.
Right,
you
well,
know,
it falls into a category that I've not heard since I was a child, but easy listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
mm-hmm.
something that can just be background noise. But it is interesting that that seems to be a problem that only acoustic artists face. That seems to be almost...
It's just... I think, whether it's justified or not, from the people who operate the event's perspective, it's the easiest out, you know?
Yeah.
Get the people who...
I don't blame it.
Mm.
I definitely see why businesses want to have music. And I think there are definitely times where music draws out more people. You know, I think that I've definitely seen events at the farmer's market where there are musicians playing, and there have been times where people will stay and sit and
mm-hmm.
eat at the farmer's market because there's music playing, where the weeks that there aren't, they don't stay as long.
Right.
And so I understand that, but it is also, I also see how it can be really frustrating for musicians, and especially musicians that are just starting out and haven't been doing it very long, to feel like people aren't listening to you, like they aren't paying
yeah.
attention to
yeah.
you.
And the other problem could be I know for me, talking about me, is, you know, it's hard for me to judge, you know, do I talk at this time? Do I talk about my music mm-hmm. when nobody's listening, kind of thing? And one thing that is great about the venues, like the farmers markets, you know, the Foundry, and places like that, are the kids. I've had more than one time where, you know, kids are walking by and all of a sudden they just stop. And then I had a little girl when I was playing the farmer's market just start dancing, mm-hmm. which is, you know, that's great because, you know, a kid is very honest.
My favorite thing is watching little kids get money from their parents to go put in tip jars.
Oh, yeah.
That's my favorite thing. I think I'm going to ask you one last question, just because you're about to go on in 10 minutes. The time has gone by quickly. I guess, what lesson have you learned playing, I guess, both as a songwriter, but also through playing out, that you would want to pass on to somebody that maybe is just starting?
No matter if it's one person or 100 person, I've heard this from other artists too, is just play your heart out. Just play like nobody's there.
So you are originally from Louisiana.
Yes, ma'am, correct. South Louisiana.
I have family in Louisiana.
Do you? What part?
I don't remember.
Doesn't matter. It's all the same. You know?
My mother's going to, you know, mom's going to listen to this and she's going to be like, what do you mean you don't remember where your family's from? So you grew up in Louisiana. We actually asked this question for our last interview, but how did your upbringing influence your writing style, and what kind of music did you listen to when you were growing up, and were those artists influential in your sound at all?
Okay, that's a good question, you know, because when I was about 12 or 13, mom bought me a guitar, and she got me like 10 lessons to play. She wanted to surprise my grandfather. Her dad, he loved Johnny Cash, so I had to learn Folsom Prison Blues for Christmas, so that's what I did. And, you know, once you pick up an instrument, you know, any kind, whether you write a lyric or not, you're going to write a melody or whatever, so you start doing that. And I grew up, I think, during the greatest era of music, because over here we had Motown, so I grew up on Smokey Robinson, The Spinners, The Temptations, Diana Ross, and then way over here we had Three Dog Night, Creedence Clearwater, Rolling Stones, and right down the pipe, you know, you had people like Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard just kind of paving the way. And so, you know, it's kind of funny. I love the music. I just love the music, not everything about each genre, but there was just always something I just enjoyed about it. And then I got to listening to some cool songs like Help Me Make It Through Tonight, like me and Bobby McGee and Loving Her Is Easier Than Anything, you know, Why Me Lord. And there was a guy, common denominator in that, even though it was different artists singing them, it was Kris Kristofferson that wrote them. And so his writing style was so intricately simple. And even to this day, he's my favorite writer of all time. And I try to not copy him, but emulate him. You know, I'd like for somebody, and recently, you know, I had a song on a Joe Nichols record, and a few years back, and somebody was doing a review of the album, and they were reviewing the song that me and a buddy of mine named Brock Stalvey wrote, and he said the writing on this one is very Christofferson-ish. So I was even compared to my hero,
yeah.
You know, at least the writing style. So that's my influence, but I love good music. You know?
Just all good music?
Yeah.
You mentioned co-writing, and yeah. I noticed that you spent a lot of time writing for other artists.
Correct? Well, that's the goal.
Can you talk a little bit about your experience co-writing songs? Because I think that's something that we've never actually discussed on here before. We've never really, really worked with an artist that
Well, it's, you know, that's another good question. I think you have to find who you are, you know, and then you start co-writing, and it's just like baby steps. Not every co-write's going to be, you know, magic or anything like that. And some co-writes, they're only once, because it's just opposite ends of the spectrum. And sometimes you can tell they will never meet. But when you do find that co-writer that you gel with, that you can compromise with, that gives something else to the song, maybe a chord structure, maybe a thought process, and you can get on the same page, that's a beautiful thing. But it takes a long time to do that, you know. And I'm not saying tens of thousands of years. I'm just taking, you know, I write 3 times a week. So a long time to find that gel might be a year, you know, and you, at the end of that year, you're going to find those 2 or 3 that you really like writing with. So you write with them as much as you can while the magic's still there. And then you reach out and you get other folks. And then by the end of the year, maybe a couple of them are, you know, just magical co-writers. But like I said, it's finding yourself and being willing to explore other avenues. You can't be too closed-minded, but you can keep yourself as a writer. There's things I won't write, and that's just because that's not me, you know. I don't want to compromise who I am because your songs tell your story, even though they may tell somebody else's story. And somebody's listening to a song, that's that writer's story that he's telling you, maybe about somebody else. So I try to keep my songs in a way that if you heard it on the radio, you'd say, well, that must be a Rick Tiger song, you know, that kind of thing.
You said you write 3 times a week. Is that co-writes you?
Yeah, I very seldom write by myself anymore. It's too fun to co-write. It's fun. And, you know, I do it, you know, we do 3 ways, 2 ways, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't care if it's 4 ways, as long as the energy's in the room, and as long as we all understand it's all about that song. It's not about us. It's not about an ego. Check your ego at the door, and it becomes all about that song. And if it becomes all about that song and what it's supposed to say, at the end of the day, you're going to have yourself a pretty stout song. May not be a number one, but it's going to be something you're proud of.
Where are you based out of now?
What's that?
Where are you based out of now?
Well, out of the Nashville area.
Oh,
yeah, out of Tennessee. I've been there for 27 years.
Yeah, I read that you first went to Nashville in 1991.
Yes.
So when you first moved. How has it... We talk about Nashville a lot. I spent a lot of time there as a child, and even it's changed in the 15 years since I've been down there. How have you witnessed it change? What strikes you as being sort of the most prevalent difference?
The difference is the music. It's a whole different thing now, and you know, some call it bro country, a pop country. It's not your traditional country as we know it from the 90s when it was at an all-time high business-wise, you know. Napster came along and changed that, and so does Spotify and Pandora. Now, it used to be in the 90s when the songwriters would get a cut on an album, they can make a living off of that. And now, unless you're on the radio, you're not going to make a living off of it. But if you absorb everything music has to offer, you can make a life out of it because of the moments that the music brings you. So if you go there looking for riches, you need to expand your thought process. And what is defined as riches? A bank account or a full heart, you know? If you don't go there because you love the music, you might not should go, you know? You should be passionate about what you want to go do. I'd say that in life and everything, but a lot of the old buildings have torn down, new buildings up. 80 people a day moving there. 10 million visitors a year. It's become quite the town, quite a different place than whenever I started, significantly, because there's way more people. The music's changed, and the way music works has changed. So if you're an old dinosaur like me, then it becomes a little unsettling. But I'm not leaving. because I came there loving music. And so if the time comes where I sit down and write a song and it's only for me, that's okay, because it's been good. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, plenty of sense. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Okay. I was going to ask if moving to Nashville is something that you would still recommend for musicians.
Well, you can make a decent living where, depending on where you're at. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can get your artist gig, you know, in Nashville, easier than maybe, you know, Edmond, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. maybe, unless you know Garth Brooks or Toby Keith, mm-hmm. you know. But I would just tell the musician to come and have some research. Come for a couple of weeks and see if it's what you want to do. And because you have to love what you're doing. And I wouldn't uproot a family to do that just yet. If you got a great family and you're playing as much as you want to wherever you're playing, and, you know, you might be overlooking perfection. You know, the perfect life. But if you come, don't come for the monetary riches of it. Come because you love the riches of the music.
What is a lesson that you've learned throughout your career that you would want to pass on to musicians who are maybe just starting out?
Well, I learned this. Years ago, there was a quote, one of those quotes that have author unknown. It's been with me since 1997. I don't know who wrote it. I wish I did. I wish they were still alive. If they, you know, wish I knew so I could go thank them. But it was just a simple quote. And it probably had nothing to do with music, but everything to do with music. It said, live your life in such a way that if someone spoke bad of you, no one else would believe it. Really, that's the essence of life. And if you have that, everything else really, you know, just, it's not as important as that, you know.
Do you think that being kind to people in professional scenarios helps?
Oh, absolutely.
You go farther?
Oh, it's a networking business. But you don't be so kind you compromise who you are. You should never, ever do that. Because you'll have to live with that for the rest of your life, whether you make it or not. So being kind to people in general, professional or at the McDonald's, is important. It's you know, it's just important. It doesn't cost anything to be nice. You know, you don't have to be a millionaire to be nice. And it is a networking business. And parlaying those relationships into something better, but I never go after a relationship just because I think it's going to better me in my music career. I want to hang out with you because I like hanging out with you, no strings attached. And then, of course, if something happens because of that, then that's just a perk in the friendship, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, you can't go wrong being nice.
One of the things I always loved about being in Nashville was that there so often were times where nobody knew who had money
yeah.
and who was famous
yes.
because there was, and there is so much humility there.
There was a lot of that.
And I feel like I've seen all walks of people in Nashville be treated the same
yeah.
because it is this city that I think you never know who you're talking to. And you're constantly reminded that you never know who you're
sure.
talking to.
You could be sitting talking to somebody and you think they're a regular Joe and they could be Garth Brooks' producer, you know, because they don't have a face on the album. They're not singing, you know. But there again, it goes about being nice to everybody because mm-hmm. you never know when it's going to come back and endear you with the blessing, so.
One thing that you've brought up a lot is about not compromising yourself.
Right.
And just, I'm wondering, what's a specific character trait you possess that, you know, would be an example of something that you don't compromise?
Well, you know what? And I'm not perfect by any means. I'm like the kid at the bowling alley with the two bumpers going down the aisle. And so I'm bouncing back and forth and the bumpers keep me kind of in line. And you know, I just think it's important that there was a guy that told me one time, he says, just make sure whatever decision you make today, you're okay with it on the 6 o'clock news. You know, and that's pretty philosophical when you think about it, you know, and it keeps you kind of grounded. Me, it's your character is all you have. You know, that's in the bottom line, you know, that's all you have. So you, whatever your character is, that's what you need to be. And don't compromise who you are just to get ahead anywhere. Why would you do that? You know, because it's not going to pay you. And, you know, it's just like even Billy Graham. Billy Graham knew he was becoming an icon, even though he was as humble as he could be. But Billy Graham also knew how the world was. So Billy Graham, he never went into a hotel room by himself. His guards or whatever, they went in because he didn't, you know, things can happen. Oh, Billy Graham went into a room with another, whatever. Well, that was never going to happen. So he might have had to take it to an extreme, you know, but that's the kind of, he wanted to keep his character who he was.
So I think I'm going to ask you one last question, just sure, so you can get something to eat. I read that you've been playing a lot of house shows, yes, while you've been touring. Mm-hmm. What would you say, do you prefer playing house shows versus any other venue?
I prefer, I like playing, okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No.
Well, you know, as a songwriter, I'm not a bar singer, because I'm going to do a set of my own stuff. I'm not going to be good for the bar. Mm-hmm. I tried that. It just doesn't work out. I want to play houses because people have a tendency when there's 25 in the living room, they kind of get, you know, you have their attention, or you have an opportunity to get their attention. Mm-hmm. And I like playing venues that are like that, kind of like here, you know, like at the Thought Lot, you know, it's you and the stage. So there's your opportunity. People don't come here to talk. Mm-hmm. They come here because they know they're coming to listen. So I've been able to play a couple of those, you know, a few of those places. I've played old movie theaters, opera houses, where people paid to come in and they sat and listened. And I did a couple performing arts centers in Canada, you know, 100 people coming in to listen. And kind of overwhelming when you have 100 people with their eyes on you to do your thing. But it's what I, you know, I'm not scared of that. And I'm blessed because of it. So that's where I like to play, is where I have at least a chance to get the attention of whoever's in the room, you know. And as a songwriter, that's the blessing of it all. When you're sitting there playing a song and you could, quiet gets quiet, then you know where your music is. You know where you fit. You know how relevant it is. Because if it's quieter than quiet, you, those people are tuned in to exactly what you're saying. And if you're lucky, some of them are hanging on to every word you're saying, because your songs are not necessarily for everybody, but you want to get the ones in the room that they are for, you know? So.
That's perfect. I think that'll be perfect.
All right, guys, that does it for this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. We post every single Wednesday. We are available on iTunes, Podomatic, and Google Play Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Make sure to drop us a like, a favorite, a subscribe, a 5-star review wherever you're listening. And we will be sure to get another episode out to you guys next week.